Good afternoon or good morning to those of you on the West, and welcome to the Talking Freight Seminar Series. My name is Nicholas Kehoe, and I will moderate today's seminar, and today's topic is on Freight Academy Capstone Projects. Before I go any further, I do want to let those of you who are calling into the teleconference for audio know that you will need to mute your computer speakers or else you will be hearing audio over the computer as well. Today we will have three presenters, Mary Grace Parker with the I-95 Corridor Coalition, Christine O'Connor with the North Carolina Department of Transportation, and Deborah Bowden with the Maryland Department of Transportation. Mary Grace Parker serves as the Freight Mobility, Safety and Security, and Program Coordinator for the I-95 Corridor Coalition, an alliance of transportation and related agencies in the 16 states spanning from Maine to Florida. Mrs. Parker serves as the project manager for the Freight Academy program and has overseen the development of the Academy concept and delivery of all three of the highly acclaimed Freight Academy sessions, which now count 90 graduates from the coalition and nationally who are applying their immersion experience to facilitate safe, efficient, and streamless freight transportation. Christine O'Connor graduated from Clemson University in 2003 with a Bachelor of Science degree in Biosystems Engineering and is a registered professional engineer in the state of North Carolina. She has over 9 years of experience in the civil engineering field, including 8 years of state government transportation experience between the North and South Carolina Departments of Transportation. She is currently a project executive with the North Carolina Department of Transportation Priority Projects Office. Deborah Bowden is the Motor Carrier and Logistics Policy Advisor with the Maryland Department of Transportation's Office of Freight and Multimodalism. In this capacity, she is the resource consultant on trucking issues. She is an advocate for supply chain partners, both the carriers and the shippers, with a focus on establishing efficient and sustainable freight systems and operations. She also leads efforts to implement performance measures and policy recommendations from the Maryland Statewide Freight Plan. Before Debbie came to state government, she worked in the private industry as a trainer and consultant to trucking companies and held logistics positions in manufacturing and food production. Today's seminar will last for 90 minutes, with 60 minutes allocated for the speakers and the final 30 minutes for audience question and answer. If during the presentations you think of a question, you can type it into the chat area, but please make sure to send your question to everyone. The presenters will be unable to answer your questions during their presentations, but I will start off with the question and answer session with the questions typed into the chat box. If we run out of time and are unable to address all of the questions, we will attempt to get written responses from the presenters to the unanswered questions. The PowerPoint presentation used today during the seminar is available from the download box on the lower right-hand corner of your screen. The presentation will also be available online within the next few weeks, along with a recording and a transcript of today's event. I will notify all attendees once these materials are posted online. One final note, Talking Freight seminars are eligible for 1.5 certification maintenance credits for AICP members. In order to obtain credit for today's seminar, you must have logged in with your first and last name, or if you are attending with a group of people, you must type in your first and last name into the chat box. I have included more detailed instructions in the file share box on how to obtain your credits after this seminar. Please also download the evaluation form from the file share box and submit this form to me after you've filled it out. While Federal Highway Administration does not formally offer the Professional Development Hour credits and will not provide proof of attendance, we have made an agenda available in the download box that participants can use to self-certify and submit for credits on their own. We are now going to go ahead and get started. Today's topic, for those of you who just joined us, is on the Freight Academy Capstone Projects. As a reminder, if you have any questions during the presentation, please type them into the chat box, and they will be answered in the last 30 minutes of the seminar. Our first presenter today will be Mary Grace Parker of the I-95 Corridor Coalition. And Mary Grace, I'll pull up your presentation now, and when you are ready, you can begin.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. We're very pleased to be here today to talk about the Freight Academy Capstone Project concept. And show you how it is used both as an instructional tool for the Freight Academy, but also how it's an example in how to prepare our attendees for real-world application. We'd like to, am I waiting a minute for this to come up? I apologize. Okay, thanks. We'd like to present this in three segments today. I'll be providing an overview of the Freight Academy and the Capstone Project. To provide context for you, that will be followed by Christine's presentation of her group's Port Access Project. Please note that this is a hypothetical exercise when Christine presents this, but you'll see its relationship to real-world issues. And finally, Deborah Bowden will follow her with her speaking about her experiences with her Capstone Project and how the Capstone Project has been, as she's seen it applied to her real-world experiences in her position. Just to give you context to why the concept of a Freight Academy, in the last number of years, many of us are familiar with the fact that there's been large increases in freight movement. The goods movement industry is a very dynamic industry that's changing all the time. It's critical that our public sector staff focus and understand freight as an integral part of the transportation industry. There's an increasing need to align our public sector freight policies and operations with community goals, not only of the freight community, but of the general transportation community. From our coalition standpoint, we've certainly learned over the years that there's a need to encourage and facilitate cross-jurisdictional and collaboration and networking within the region and nationally. And this becomes particularly critical as we see a change in staff through attrition and retirement of senior-level staff. It creates a need to train mid-level staff to step in as those vacancies occur. The concept of the Freight Academy is to provide a unique hands-on educational experience and to promote freight movement as the single integrated system. We look to link our professional development work here to agency development so that as our graduates become more understanding of freight as an overall concept, they can bring that back not only to their own position, but to pay forward and move that information within their agency study. Excuse me. Our goal was to build upon existing programs and complement them, the Federal Highway Administration's programs and Freight Professional Development and NHI, along with ASHTO and other programs, including in the university community, to have added to this suite of available opportunities so that particularly not only in the private sector, but primarily for our focus on the public sector side, we build an extremely robust and knowledgeable transportation staff. We look to educate these people in the most recent technological and industry trends to try to establish, and you'll hear this later from Deb, the recognition of a need for common terminology and an ongoing dialogue about freight. Our key was to involve private sector freight executives in instruction to create that interaction and understanding of an industry perspective. And so you'll see as I speak today that our program is very, very driven by heavily private sector speakers and tours. And to build those peer relationships across agencies and jurisdictions. And we begin by building those relationships within the academy concept itself. Our academy classes have represented a broad geographical area of people from different agencies and different levels. And as a result, they learn to collaborate and to talk across common lines, and many of those relationships continue post-academy. As I mentioned, we are building on established concepts, methods for training. When we looked at building the academy program, there were outstanding activities going out there in programs such as METRANS and the University of Denver that included work with Capstone projects. A number of executive programs that are in the public sector world, again, as well as those professional development courses. And our goal was intended to add value to the work that people are doing, the educational opportunities they've experienced, but also, again, to provide opportunity to increase knowledge and to increase interaction with peers. Our program is an immersion program, and that's what sets up the group to be able to educate their agencies and ultimately to apply some of this work, including in the Capstone Project. We start before the academy by providing an assignment of pre-reading materials. We ask them to develop a freight profile of the region, and we ask them, in many cases, we focus our scholarships and our selection on having at least a core Federal Highway Professional Development course, particularly looking at the course integrating freight in the transportation planning process. Our program is an immersion program. It's not meant to mimic either a university setting or a workshop. It really is a six-day, very intensive immersion program. They arrive on a Sunday. By midday Sunday, they're beginning a week that goes extensively through Friday, covering shippers, the freight system, customers, all of the elements involved in goods movement. It's a combination of classroom instructors, predominantly lectures and presentations and discussions led by private sector, organizational staff, and then a series of field visits with on-site briefings, either complementing some of those earlier instructors, following up on their presentations, or following up on a particular freight concept, and then a field visit to a site that gives an example of those concepts and supply chain activities in action. And then finally, what you'll hear about today, a capstone project that they complete. As I just want to show you very quickly, this is a very intense immersion week. Even the evening time dinners and receptions are made up of speakers. So the groups break into their teams for their capstones at periods during the week. But throughout the week, all 30 of them move very quickly through a very fast-paced agenda. And the intention of that is to mirror the freight world, where decisions are made in more quickly and in much more rapid and shortened horizons than commonly we sometimes experience in the public world. An example of some of the, we've had an outstanding experience and a lot of great work by one of our academy staff, Ann Strauss Weider, who's very active. We hold these in the New Brunswick, New Jersey area. And Rutgers provides outstanding classroom facilities through Kate. And as a result, we're able to dig very deeply into that robust and almost unique distribution, warehousing, supply chain world that exists up in the Exidy, New Jersey area. So you can see some of our private sector partners we've had over the years that have provided sample field visits, places like Macy's, FedEx, Mar Terminal at the Port of Newark, Elizabeth, auto processing terminals, refrigeration companies such as Halls, and then major familiar names like Hyundai and Coca-Cola. Our lecture series, again, senior executives, we'll have one or two times we'll bring in people from the public sector to maybe talk about a unique experience in the public sector involving supply chain, goods movement, freight planning. That's a great best practice or lessons learned, but predominantly our instructors are private sector instructors. Again, coming from the world of rail, maritime, people involved in launching short sea shipping companies. We've had all types of executives at all levels. And our panels of speakers are selected in part not only to provide a concept, but to help promote interesting dialogue. And through each segment, we give our participants an opportunity to enjoy ample time for questions and answers. And as we set up the capstone project, you'll see that already has started early in the week, so they can key some of their questions thinking about their projects. The capstone project itself is meant to emulate best practices, as I've said earlier, in the programs that we identified that are out there to date. We've expanded our experience with situations that are likely to arise while managing freight, particularly in a public organization, again, looking to gain public and private sector perspectives. And a key part of this capstone project is to help build team and leadership skills to allow the capstone project participants to take the information that they bring to the academy, the knowledge, education, and expertise, as well as what they hear during the week, to provide them in a team environment, and as you'll hear from how some of the groups construct them, through various components, each one of them gets to exercise leadership skills in the execution of the project. Our approach is to provide hypothetical problem statements. We did toy with the idea of using some real-world examples, but because we're very geographically diverse, and you'll see this later in terms of where our academy participants have come from, we recognize that to start to deal with real-world issues lends a number of problems, from pragmatic to political, to just process things that would not be proper or, frankly, workable in this type of situation. So instead, we pick topical areas. We look at about 5 to 6 key areas. We looked at things like freight bottlenecks, port access, freight resiliency, environmental sustainability in freight, and we create a hypothetical problem statement that we then provide. When the groups, as they are selected as Academy attendees, the participants are allowed to indicate, they're provided what those capstone problem statements are, and they're allowed to indicate their top three choices or the problem concept they're provided. And we use this as a means of assigning participants to project teams. They don't always get the one they want, because a lot of times we do look at geographical basis, because we actually try to bring a diverse group of people together, not from the same agencies, not necessarily all metropolitan planning organizations or Department of Transportation staff. We actually want them to have people from very different areas where we can facilitate that, because we think it helps to enhance the experience. They are then broken into teams of 5 to 7, and they participate in project work during and after the immersion phase of the Academy. The executive mentor panel is at the end. They return once the Academy is completed with their project capstones outlined. They've done some work depending on the amount of time they've been able to put in and the amount of time they've been able to come to agreement on issues with an outline of their project, and they go back and we facilitate over the next number of months opportunities for us to, because they're diversely placed and geographically placed, we'll host conference calls and webinars for them as they work on their different pieces and pull together. And that all culminates at the end in an executive mentor session where some of the senior executives and executives throughout our three academies, we've had some of the top-notch people in transportation who have offered to serve as mentors. And these mentors actually receive the papers, they take and they review them, and they provide feedback to the group in two ways. During this mentor panel, it's about a 90-minute to two-hour time frame. The group first presents their project. The executives have read the paper. The first time they see their PowerPoint summary is in this call. They literally role play as the executives or senior executives they are, and they'll ask questions as if they're being presented in a real-world setting. Once that's completed, we'll do another go-around, and the mentors will now move to acting as mentors and critiques, and they'll provide suggestions, thoughts, comments, and many times accolades, obviously, to the group on the work they've done, and it gives the group an opportunity to really hear how well they've applied this. We use our Freight Academy website before, during, and after the Academy as a way to provide information on the program, upcoming academies, and upon the completion and finalization of the capstones, we then put them on the website so they are out there, again, as hypothetical examples, but people can see how the graduates have been able to apply these settings. And we've learned that many times as executives are being asked to send people to the Freight Academy, I've heard back in many occasions that they've gone to the website and they've looked and they've seen not only the information about the Academy, but the outputs, and that solidified both executives and agencies and other organizations that have supported the Academy to continue. In the longer term, as we're building upon the capstone work, we're looking to make this a resource area for our Freight Academy graduates, again, complementing building other work that's being done by the Federal Highway Administration, AASHTO, and others. Finally, you can see, just to give you an idea, a number of these dots could be doubled and tripled, but I wanted to leave you as you listen to the next part of our groups with just a representation of the Freight Academy program in terms of our graduates. You can see multiple agencies, whether they've been county, city, district level, Federal Highway, Department of Transportation at the state level, port authorities, transportation authorities, toll agencies, Federal Motor Carrier, MARAD. I think if you can name just about any type of transportation agency, they've had someone that represents that type out of these 90 graduates. And again, they're very geographically diverse, and I think the graduates themselves will tell you that they build a network that they continue to go to at times and bounce off questions. And we're particularly pleased that as you look to the north, you can see the Coalition is an affiliate organizational agencies in the provinces of Quebec and New Brunswick, and we've been lucky to have them have attendees at the Academy, and that has provided a multinational cross-border perspective to our Academy setting and to the robustness of the capstone project work. So with that, I'd like to turn this back to Nick.
Thank you, Mary Grace. We will now move into our second presenter, Christine O'Connor. And Christine, when you are ready, you can begin.
Okay, thank you, Nicholas. As a recent graduate of the 2012 Freight Academy, I'd just like to share with you a little bit about my capstone experience, what it entailed, how my team undertook this assignment, what our results were, and what I personally learned from it. Being from North Carolina, where we recently completed a comprehensive maritime strategy study for our two ports, I was really eager to participate in the Port Access Capstone Project. That was actually my first choice, which I did actually get. Not only did I have some real-world experience in this area of focus, but my goal was to learn as much as possible about port access and expansion so that I could be of even greater benefit to my agency when I got back. According to our project statement, my team had been tasked by our DOT commissioner with studying the possibilities for growth and the associated access issues at a fictional port in preparation for the ongoing expansion of the Panama Canal, which is anticipated to be complete in 2015. We were also asked to determine the role that the state could play in bringing more cargo and consequently more jobs and economic activity to the port. Due to the foresight of our Freight Academy leaders, our team was highly diverse, both geographically and in the nature of our different fields of expertise. Our team members had wide-ranging experience in a variety of transportation fields, including freight, rail, port, transportation planning, and overall project management skills. As an added bonus, our team members hailed from all corners of the United States, from the Pacific Northwest, the Southeast, and the Northeast. We actually even had one member that came all the way from Canada, which enabled us to have an international perspective on our project as well. Given the limited time frame that we were able to spend working on this project actually in person during the Freight Academy, our first order of business was to identify the process by which we plan to work through our problem. Exercising some creative license, we began with defining our port's background and context. Getting some of our initial assumptions regarding port size, location, and operations out of the way up front enabled us to more easily move forward with solving our problem. Next, we identified the key strategic areas that we wanted to focus on in order to address the issues of expansion and access for our port. In order to make our remote teamwork a success, since we are all across the country, the continent, if you will, and in multiple time zones, we assigned each focus area to an individual team member or pair of team members, depending on the nature of the workload. This allowed us to work independently from our respective locations and coordinating by conference call or email as necessary. And then after the initial research was completed, we did participate in several conference calls to more fully define our proposed strategies and select our final recommendations. In order to simplify our project and sort of reduce the number of assumptions that we were going to have to make, we modeled our aptly named Port of Capstone Bay very closely on the Port of Charleston in South Carolina. Now, to give you some background, the Port of Capstone Bay is located in an urban area with a population of over 630,000 in the mid-Atlantic region of the East Coast. This area is one of the state's most vital resources, with the port generating nearly $45 billion a year and hundreds of thousands of jobs. As I already mentioned, with the expansion of the Panama Canal expected to be complete by 2015, which could lead to a potential cargo shift anywhere from 20 to 30% from West Coast to East Coast ports, new opportunities for growth are emerging for our port at Capstone Bay. This port has five public marine terminals that are equipped to handle a variety of operations, including break bulk, containers, wheeled cargo, oversized overweight cargo, and ro-ro operations. A new cruise ship terminal is currently under construction and is anticipated to be complete by 2014. Three of these terminals support container traffic and have a combined 21 cranes, 16 of which are post-Panamax in size. Last year, Capstone Bay processed nearly 1.4 million TEUs and approximately 790,000 tons of break bulk cargo. These volumes were composed of a diverse range of commodities, including agricultural products, consumer goods, machinery, iron, steel, vehicles, salt, paper and clay products, stone, cement, and petroleum coke. Now, to give you a little bit more background about the ins and outs of Capstone Bay, the imports and exports, North Europe and Asia are the port's top markets, combining for over 55% of total volume and serving over 100 nations in those areas. More than 20 carriers have vessels that carry cargo between Capstone Bay and over 150 nations worldwide. The top imported commodities include furniture, auto parts, sheets, towels, blankets, fabrics such as raw cotton, truck tires, general cargo, apparel, paper, and household goods, while the top exported commodities include also paper products, wood pulp, auto parts, logs and lumber, fabrics such as raw cotton, general cargo, synthetic resins, mixed metal scrap, chemicals, and poultry. The overall handling capacity of all five terminals is currently at 85% of maximum. The new cruise ship terminal has been permitted and is currently under construction, as I mentioned, with completion slated for 2014. Right now, this region offers a maintained harbor of 45 feet at mean low tide throughout the main shipping channel and 47 feet in the entrance channel. We have a 5 to 6 foot tidal lift that provides some deeper access for several hours during the day. As for air draft, the Columbus Street Terminal has no air draft limitations currently, while the relatively new Ravenel Bridge, which provides access to both the Wando Welch and the new cruise ship terminals, does allow 186 feet of vertical clearance at mean high water. However, ships sailing to the North Charleston Terminal must transit underneath the Don Holt Bridge, which currently only has 150 feet of available air draft. In terms of highway connections, the primary interstate artery into and out of Capstone Bay is Interstate 26. Interstates 95, 77, 20, 85, and 40 are all directly linked to Capstone Bay via I-26. Rail access is another important element of the port's operations, and currently CSX and Norfolk Southern both operate large, well-equipped rail yards within the port of Capstone Bay. Intermodal service is available at the Wando Welch Terminal via direct dray to the railhead, while dockside rail service is available at Columbus Street, Union Pier, and North Charleston Terminals. There is exceptionally high and wide rail clearances that allow for double-track trains, and both Norfolk Southern and CSX offer daily container express services to key cities in the South, Midwest, and Mid-Atlantic. Connections to points beyond are available with both lines. In terms of warehouses and cargo service providers, the State Port Authority is supported by a well-equipped local warehousing community. Private firms facilitate the movement of imports and exports both to and from the port facilities for companies that ship or receive raw materials, components, and products. These firms provide freight forwarding, shipping, and customs house brokering. So you can see, taking the initiative to base our port on an existing port really helped us to minimize the number of assumptions that we were going to have to make and helped us to maximize the time that we had both together and when we were further apart trying to meet our deadlines completing the Capstone project. In order to focus our efforts, we identified three key strategic areas and the corresponding trends that would enable us to best address the issues of port expansion and access. These include port productivity, which would entail modifying our port operations in order to improve productivity and access, harbor improvements, which would enable us to enhance our port's waterside access, and then multimodal connections. Improving these would also help to enhance our landside access. For each of these strategies, we performed an analysis of the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and challenges associated with each one, and then identified any potential environmental benefits and challenges as well. In the case of port productivity, our team proposed three key strategies to improve productivity and access, including extending business hours, implementing a gate appointment system, and truck stop electrification. Of the three proposed strategies, our team determined that only the implementation of extended business hours and a gate appointment system would be recommended, since they can effectively improve terminal access, reduce congestion, and increase port velocity with a low amount of infrastructure investment requirement. Given the scarcity of available space for port expansion, as I already mentioned, we had 85% of our ports currently developed. These strategies provide a cost-effective way for us to enhance our port throughput and capacity. Our team also recommended proposed plans for implementing these two strategies. For instance, implementing extended business hours would require collaboration between all stakeholders. The stakeholders would need to be fully engaged, and further feasibility analysis would be required in order to evaluate the impact of an extended business hour strategy. Our team recommended four options for implementing this particular strategy. Or it's really four suggestions, because you don't want to choose between them. They're a part of a larger strategy. But forming an extended business hours working group was our first one, and that would include representatives from both the private and public sectors, including port authority, port terminal operators, warehouse and distribution centers, trucking companies, steamship lines, local government, and of course your State Department of Transportation. We also recommended organizing meetings with stakeholders to discuss their perspectives regarding feasibility, benefits, costs, obstacles, anything dealing with the implementation of extended business hours at the Port of Capstone Bay. We also suggested evaluating the feasibility and impact of industry-driven collaborative efforts among the stakeholders, as well as implementing incentives and/or fees for utilizing off-peak hours in order to implement this extended business hour program. And our final recommendation for this particular strategy was to determine the impact of extended business hours on terminal operations, determine the impact of the most effective types of fees, incentives that we could use, how these funds could be used, the impact these would have on port competitiveness, and really whether or not industries are going to support the implementation of extended business hours. That's definitely a key part of it. The successful implementation of a gate appointment system requires buy-in from both terminals and trucking companies. Our team recommended the following steps to determine how effective this strategy could be and in order to start on implementation of this strategy. We suggested forming a working group to include terminal operators and trucking companies that could communicate the benefits that they might obtain from a truck appointment system, and then discussing the key obstacles and concerns of implementation. Meeting with stakeholders to discuss this topic and evaluate the benefits and costs associated with different types of gate appointment systems, including pre-advice, conventional appointment, advanced appointment systems, and a port community system. Based on the feedback we got at those with those stakeholders, we would then determine which one received the most buy-in. We also suggested providing incentives to truckers, such as a priority lane to those that had appointments in order to minimize your wait time, which would enable us, hopefully, to get a higher participation rate. And then finally, evaluating different funding mechanisms, including public-private partnerships, in order to help pay for this project. The key component to successfully implementing our plans for the Port of Capstone Bay include identifying our target audiences, obtaining buy-in from both the public and private sectors, and then keeping these stakeholders engaged throughout the process. In order to accomplish this, we investigated a variety of public engagement strategies and recommended those that we felt could be most successful, including charrettes, which are a collaborative community brainstorming and visioning sessions, advisory councils, the use of social media tools such as Facebook and Twitter, town hall meetings, direct mailers, and also focus groups. We evaluated each of these options based on cost, on the amount of staff that would be required, and the difficulty of implementation, and developed both short-term, mid-term, and long-term horizons for those strategies that we felt would be most effective. In the short-term horizon, we recommended creating an advisory council of industry stakeholders to help engage specific industries and provide technical expertise, holding design charrettes and town hall meetings to help capture the community's vision and also their concerns, because we don't just want to hear what they like about it, we also need to hear what their very serious and maybe not so serious concerns are, but their concerns as a whole. implementing a social media outreach campaign to help us reach a wider audience and also to help keep people engaged throughout the process, not just when we're out there having meetings, but to keep people engaged during the entire study implementation and in the end, once things are actually on the ground. And then finally, organizing and holding focus groups that would allow for direct interaction with stakeholders and also extended dialogue about the issues that matter most to them. For the midterm and long-term horizons, our recommendations included continuing to engage the public and private sectors using social media or email, touching base with our advisory council members so we can stay abreast of their issues and concerns, and really just making sure that nothing's falling through the cracks. These types of informal and flexible communication methods would really allow us to keep our broad audience engaged throughout the process and enable us to be responsive to the evolving needs of both the community and key industries. In retrospect, this capstone experience ended up being an invaluable experience for me, not only because of the technical knowledge that I gained during the research and development process, but also for the ways in which it broadened and enriched my horizons, both personally and professionally. I've been able to refresh my critical thinking skills and then apply them to situations that I face in my day-to-day work, as well as developing a network of contacts that I can turn to when I come across a new question or problem. And really, all in all, this experience has been one of the most enriching opportunities I've ever been a part of. So at this point, I'm going to turn it back over to Nicholas.
Thank you very much, Christine. Our final presenter will be Debbie Bowden from the Maryland Department of Transportation. And Debbie, when you are ready, you can begin.
Thank you, Nicholas. Hello, everyone. My name is Debbie Bowden. I'm with the Maryland Department of Transportation. And to give you a little bit of background before I really get into my experience with dealing with capstones projects in the real world, or it could read capstone projects and the real world. I attended the first Freight Academy in 2008, and it was a fantastic experience. As Mary Grace and Christine have both said, we had an opportunity to see real world experiences here from the private sector. For our capstone project, we were tasked with a term that not many people at the time knew or understood, and that is freight resiliency. And that was, we were to develop a plan for addressing the infrastructure needs and longer-term policies that would reduce or could reduce opportunities for a major disruption in service due to weather or other events. So as we started our capstone work and our team members, I'm going to flip over to that next slide, our team was comprised of a variety of disciplines from different agencies, much as Christine has talked about. We had two folks from state departments of transportation. We had one participant from a city department of transportation, another from a regional transportation authority, one from a port authority, and then someone represented it from an MPO. So as we started our capstone work, which we started during the intense week during the Freight Academy, we all were approaching this idea of freight resiliency and what that meant from the focal point of our different experiences and the work that we did, and also from the different size agencies and different concentrations that our agencies provide for transportation. Now, we were fortunate that everyone was located within the Northeast, so we had that commonality. So we didn't necessarily have to work through, understanding how it's a bit different, perhaps in the Midwest for freight resiliency versus along the coast for freight resiliency. But we did have to work through some needs and opportunities in developing our capstone. And again, I'm sharing this with you and we'll bring it back and relate it to how it has worked for the real world. So one of the needs that we had to overcome was an unfamiliar topic. As I said, in 2008, 4 years ago, freight resiliency was a term that not many people realized outside of rescue and recovery or emergency management. So what did it mean to make freight and the freight system resilient? So our capstone group, we worked together based on what we learned at the Freight Academy and what we each brought from our own particular disciplines. We developed this idea of freight resiliency for this project. And again, much as Christine related in her hypothetical presentation on her capstone project, we had to define it. And one of the things that we found in the Freight Academy was the use of language. Simply, for those of you who work all the time on the highway side for freight, you know that a truck can also be called a motor carrier, can also be called a commercial motor vehicle. It may weigh 10,001 or more pounds, or it may have two or more axles. So we, in our capstone project, we need to define what did freight resiliency mean, and that helped us to focus what we were going to report on, how we were going to do our research. And that discussion, it took some while because we did have approaches from varying disciplines. We had planners. I am in a policy office. We had folks who deal with operations. So the other need and opportunity we had in developing our capstone was to each of us to bring our own expertise and develop that commonality. What did freight resiliency mean from an operations standpoint? What did it mean from a policy standpoint? And certainly from a planning standpoint. So in developing the framework for our capstone project, and again, Christine talked about this, we needed to use an imaginative way of setting aside, getting through some of the assumptions that could trip us up. Where geographically were we going to focus on our plan? Were we going to have a plan, or were we going to have an operations manual? And to be quite honest, our team, we took a little bit of time getting through that and working through that. However, that was so valuable for all of us to be able to say, okay, we're not just talking about freight and resiliency. We're talking about resiliency in a transportation system, and we're talking about developing a fictional project with few assumptive guidelines, and how do we work through that? And we were able to, and I'll get to that in the next couple of slides, but those were some of the things that in the process of developing our project and in developing a capstone project or any kind of exercise like this that we had to learn to get through. I think that once we got over some assumptions and applied some fictionalization to the process, we jumped miles ahead. The other opportunity and need that we had to work through is anytime that you have something like this that's not priority for your agency or organization, one needs to learn how to balance that with the normal workflow and scheduling that you have. I know that I went through this myself. Again, as a policy person, I recognize that for operations, there are needs, work needs that are immediate. You have a system shut down, or you need to respond quickly. On the policy side, my work isn't necessarily that immediate. However, I do one of the things that I needed to do while I was working on the capstone project is deal with our state legislative session. We went into our four-month session, and so I was needing to respond quickly to requests from elected officials. So there was a balance of that. How do I meet a deadline that a team has put together to develop a capstone versus the deadline for an elected official wanting information on freight? And so that balancing of working with the capstone and actual work and demands of my superiors sometimes caused me to have a little bit of anxiety, but we worked through it, and that goes to the last point, and I say we worked through it because we as a team really came together, and we were able to break the 80-20 rule. The 80-20 rule, for those of you who've been involved in any kind of teamwork, typically it's understood that 20% of any size group will do 80% of the work. And I'm happy to say that our capstone team did not do that. Everyone really pulled together to bring about a balanced effort to complete the capstone project. And that's important. That absolutely points to any kind of project in the real world. You need to be aware, if you're a project manager or a team leader, you need to be aware and engage all of the members of your team so that those 20% does not have to do 80% of the work. So that was some of the needs and the opportunities in developing the process of how we were going to do our capstone project on freight resiliency, some of the scheduling conflicts that we had, some of the just the workflow conflicts that we had. But as I said, we achieved a lot. Number one, we worked together as a team, and I think that says a lot for the team members. We were from different agencies. We were in the same time zone. That was good. But we were at had different levels of responsibility, and yet each of us really pitched in and provided a cohesive and collaborative effort to get our capstone project done. Personally, one of the things that I found that was really that I felt really good about in the capstone process was I was able to apply lessons from the Freight Academy. As Nicholas had introduced me in my bio, I do have private sector freight experience, but nothing could have prepared me for what I was able to learn at the Freight Academy. And then to take that one step further and do not just have the academic side of hearing from the private sector and from the executives at the transportation departments and economic development departments, not just have the academic side, but to apply it through the capstone, that was very valuable. And it also provided a system, the capstone provided a system of doing that in a safe way. I was doing a project, I was part of a team, I was doing some research and putting together documents for a very important topic, freight resiliency. But at the end of the day, if I didn't quite get it right, I had an opportunity for a panel of mentors to look at it and say, no, this is not how freight resiliency should be handled on a highway system, or why don't you consider doing this if you're looking at port resiliency? And I could learn from that process. So really being able to take it from an academic standpoint at the Freight Academy and doing that application in a nice, safe manner was highly valuable. And the other thing that I personally was able to achieve from the capstone process was to be able to get that cross-awareness from varying disciplines, to hear the operations side of it, to hear a planning side of it, to understand, get an understanding of how a city department of transportation would look at freight resiliency differently than my own state department of transportation, how an MPO versus a port authority would look at things differently. That was also valuable, and that I've really been able to use outside of the Freight Academy work in my own work as I've been working towards developing freight policies for the state of Maryland. And then again, for myself, it helped to really strengthen my project organizational and management skills. You've got all the different types of people. You have different types of objectives. And bringing that all together with this common goal of having a capstone project on freight resiliency to put before a panel of mentors, that really guided me to be able to look at how to organize the process and try some things out and recognize things that didn't work, other things that did work, and apply that since then in the work that I do for Maryland. So just to recap here, the capstone project, the benefits are many. I think I want to reiterate that it's the safety part of it, the fact that it's fictional, and that gives you some flexibility, and it gives you some the ability to make some assumptions. It also gives the ability to change course if something's not working. And that, when we first started, when the team first started, we discovered that the framework of our presentation, how we were going to approach the presentation itself. So we were looking at the end and then pulling back, but that probably wasn't going to work. The team recognized it was going to be so overwhelming that we weren't really, we were almost setting ourselves up for not having success. So the capstone, another capstone project benefit is it allows you that flexibility to change course so that you can get out of the process what you really want to put into it. So instead of spending a lot of time worrying about how we were going to make this grand presentation, we pulled back and simplified it and really were able to learn more about freight resiliency instead of learning about how to make a big, bold, flashy presentation. Success depends on teamwork. I can't say that enough. To give an example of how we've been able to, how I've been able to apply that outside of the Freight Academy, twofold. I am in Maryland, and that is very close to Delaware. We share a peninsula. And working with folks from the Delaware Department of Transportation, from the Delaware Economic and Development Office, working with people, folks at Virginia Department of Transportation, we were able to develop two phases of a freight study for the peninsula, again, a landmass that is shared by three different jurisdictions. So the experience I had through the Capstone Project in dealing with different agencies and understanding how different agencies approach a project, working with planners and operations people, really helped me in a real-world situation of developing the phases for Delmarva freight study. And then within my own organization, Maryland Department of Transportation, I work at the Secretary's office. We're the umbrella organization for all the modal administration. So there's State Highway, Transit, Airport, and Port. And again, just having experience through Capstone and recognizing that not everybody thinks the way I do when they're thinking about freight helped me to develop a communication message and helped me develop a teamwork, a way of developing teamwork within MDOT itself. And so that goes to the last point on the slide. It really, the Capstone Project mimics what you see in your own agency and your own organizational environments. Not everybody comes to the table with the same ideas. Language is so important, getting that commonality to make sure that everyone is on the same page and understanding the terms you use, to understanding what a project is meant to do, the goal and objective of the project, the process, and what the outcome of that project is. That's so valuable, and that makes your work in any kind of organization or any type of discipline that much easier. And so the Capstone Project, as emphasis for the Freight Academy, really helps to develop those skill sets. That's all I have. Nicholas, I'm going to turn it back over to you.